You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
To get to some of the positives for Boston in this game, right? And as I mentioned earlier, there were a lot of them. It was a very, very competitive, hard-fought game all the way around. But as I mentioned previously, Tampa was able to do some things tonight that typically the Bruins get the upper hand in. One of the things I didn't mention, which thankfully you guys just brought up, was the third period. Like, Boston's always dominant in the third period all year. They're going to continue to be so, and I'm not concerned about it at all. But if you're looking at some of the reasons why they lost tonight, that's another thing that Tampa just kind of was better than them at tonight was the third period. And you guys already covered that, so I'm not going to go there. But as far as what the Bruins did well, both of their goals were a thing of beauty. The first goal to tie the game 1-1, 4-4, it was Boston 2022, 2023 Boston Bruins hockey, right? It was possession. It was movement without the puck. And Brad Marchand was able to take a nice little pass from Clifton after some good work by Pastrnak. And he was able to go 5-full on a quick snapshot to tie the game 1-1. What did you guys make of that 4-4 goal? Again, the Bruins controlled play a lot, I thought, for the first 40 minutes. And this was after – this came on the heels of Taylor Hall – getting a goalie interference penalty on Vasilevsky for kind of, it was a really like a nothing play. I mean, it was kind of like, Sergachev kind of guided him into Vasilevsky, and it was no harm, no foul type thing. I mean, yeah, if you want to call goalie interference, go for it. That got negated when Sergachev just kind of went Paul Bunyan on Taylor Hall, made it 4-4. And then the Bruins took over, made that count in the aforementioned Marchand goal.
Yeah. It was sort of a puck don't lie moment, because I felt like the Bruins should have had the power play out of that. Like, Sergachev did way more than Hall. Like, the initial collision is Sergachev knocking Hall into Vasilevsky, and, like, you know, I don't know, maybe Hall would have made contact anyways, but
do you think
you can't
anything,
know that? And then Sergachev just like throws it, five cross checks. What
do you think the fact that Sergachev reacted as if Hall had really like done this himself, like, led to the penalty being called? Because he responded as if this was like the worst thing anyone could have done to his goalie, and he had nothing to do with it. So I almost wonder if how bad Sergachev's response was led to them thinking that it was more than it was.
It's a good question, but I saw on the side replay, the arm went up right away before Sergachev got in there.
Okay. Yeah. True.
So I don't know. But anyway, it's like, I thought if anything, that should have been a Bruins power play. It ends up 4-4, and just great puck possession play by the Bruins. Like, they change out three of the four guys on the ice within about 10 seconds of that goal and just keep in possession, walking the blue line. And then you end up with the great shot by Marchand to finish it. That was impressive. The second goal that the Bruins got, equally impressive in terms of puck movement with the check line. You know, Pastrnak makes a great dangle to get around a Lightning defender. I thought Pastrnak did that a lot tonight. I think had some great passes. Really, you know, ends up with only one point, right? I don't think he assisted on the first one. Yeah, so one point, but could have easily had three or four. Like, he was slinging sauce all over the place.
Slinging sauce and puck don't lie.
And then Krejci gets it over to Zacha. So two pretty goals by the Bruins.
And just an all-around game from Pastrnak, where you see that he's not scoring, but he's still impacting the game so much. And he's making plays that they didn't score on, but that pass to Lindholm, like, that Lindholm ends up going around the net and trying to wrap around after, but he's somehow sees Lindholm crashing, makes this backhand pass all the way through, you know, the center of the ice where there's a bunch of defenders, and it makes it perfectly where it needs to go. And he did it a few times where he just somehow made this pass, and it brings us back to something that we talked about before, that Pastrnak used to see himself in his game as a playmaker and someone with the vision to set things up rather than just that like threat to score, especially like on that one time shot. So was a threat in a lot of areas. I think he blocked a shot and I was like, okay, maybe don't do that, because maybe you don't want to see him step in front of a slap shot. But he was doing all the little things right, and possessing and passing and kind of just showing that his skill set is not just scoring.
Yeah, and early on in the second period, the only stretch of play from him I didn't really like was when the Bruins had that that 5-on-4 penalty that carried over at the end of the first period. Bruins came out in the second period and just they weren't crisp. I think Pastrnak tried to hit somebody up the middle, went for icing or something like that, and then he ended up taking a penalty to negate the power play. But aside from that, like 30-second stretch, to your point, Bridget, he was all over the ice. That pass to Lindholm was beautiful. In a game like this, it's a big boy game, and you have guys back there like Chernak and Bogosian and Hedman and guys that can wear down opposing forwards down low. So in a game like this, I really try to see, all right, obviously Pastrnak can you know, do whatever he wants when he has time and space, but you know, is he gonna, how's he gonna fare in those one-on-one battles and whatnot and races to loose pucks? And to my eyes, he passed that test with flying colors tonight. I thought that it was interesting. David Krejci once again just makes me like eat my own words, because there were so many times this game where I just thought the Bruins had one too many passes. They gave up opportunities to shoot. And look, who am I to tell these guys how to play hockey? I mean, somebody like Krejci, you know, he's top 10 in Bruins franchise every statistical category besides goal scoring, which I think he's just outside the top 10. So the guy knows what he's doing. But sometimes you can't help it. The fan in you just kind of wants to yell shoot like you're in the 300s at the Garden. But that said, when the Bruins tie the game 2-2, it's because he takes that extra second to find Zacha. And it's right. Like you think he has a chance to shoot that puck, and he does, but he elects to pass it. And next thing you know, it's 2-2. So, you know, there goes Krejci again. Just tell him, keep down, Brian, keep down. So I'll keep down if you want me to, but keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, and I just caught Krejci's post-game press conference right before we started recording, and he even admitted, he was like, yeah, there were maybe a couple of other times we overpassed a little, and it's like, yeah, there were. You know, there was the one in particular where Pastrnak gets it to him, and he has a shooting lane, but he tries to get it over to Hall instead, and the defender was already shading over to Hall, so it's like, they were giving you the shot, and you know, he just didn't take it, and you live with it. I think he's gotten better at that over the course of his career, of taking shots when they're there. But every now and then, that you know, diehard pass first instinct that he has will come back to bite him. And like, you know, to your point, it's like he's awesome. He knows what he's doing. 95 times out of 100 he's gonna do the right thing, but you know, when he does pass on the shot, like, and it's there, it's frustrating. You know, obviously, and it's like, it's almost a running joke, like Pastrnak even joked about that earlier this season when he made a comment of like, well, we know Krejci's not gonna shoot, so someone has to type thing. So yeah, you know, I think Krejci will probably watch a video on that and be like, yeah, okay, I should have shot that.
I think it should have been fairly obvious, like 2 seconds after he made the pass. That, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Well, if you watch. Yeah, sorry, Bridget, what were you saying?
No, go ahead, because I was going to change the subject.
Well, if you watch that play as well, like we're all talking about that second period play, I think, down the other end where he had a chance to shoot in the slot. If you do watch that replay, if he wanted to shoot that puck, he would have had to have done it like right away, because as a righty, he got to a point where he turned so much that he wouldn't have much power behind it. It would be kind of a little bit of a flimsy snapshot, if anything. And I think that in his mind, he was like, I'd rather dish this than not get a lot behind a shot. If you watch the replay, you'll see what I'm talking about. His body was kind of a little too tilted at that point, but I digress. What did you want to bring up, Bridget?
So this was something we mentioned could happen a few podcasts ago, and ever since DeBrusk has been out, we were talking about maybe Taylor Hall could go to the first line, but that it was kind of unconventional and maybe not the best thing to do because he would have to play his offside on the right wing, and he would, you know, he hasn't played. We don't know the last time he's played on the right side because you're going to leave Marchand left, Bergeron center, and so you take him off the third line and he goes up with Marchand and Bergeron. How do you think he played in that role?
I thought it was other than that one good drive to the net where, you know, he gets called for goal interference, that was a fairly quiet game for Taylor Hall. And I don't know that it's necessarily related to the switch versus just being kind of a quiet game for him in general. There weren't any instances that I noticed of like him looking awkward out there playing right wing. And, you know, and both him and Marchand said before the game, like, it was going to be pretty interchangeable. Like, sure, they'll line up Marchand left, Hall right. But then, you know, if someone's higher up on the forecheck and they're on the other side of the ice, they'll just switch. If someone comes back first, you know, they'll just track the play to whatever side of the ice it goes. Like, you know, I think they're both fine with, you know, we're going to end up where we end up. We don't have to just stay on our wings. So, and I think you saw that play out a few times. So I don't think that, you know, the move to the right side is why he had a quieter night. I just thought it was, you know, kind of, obviously the last couple games had been really good for him. And this was a little bit more of what we had seen in the few weeks prior where, you know, he's just not quite as involved as you want him to be.
I would say that if I'm Jim Montgomery, I'm going to give him another opportunity. I don't see the harm in allowing them. It's to take one game and just shut down the option, I think is silly. I think it's stubborn. Because on one hand, I'm with Scott. I definitely thought that it was a quiet night for Hall. I didn't think that line was all too dangerous. 5-on-5. I don't know if the scoring chances back me up there or high danger scoring chances, but it wasn't a phenomenal game. If you only had one opportunity, sorry, Scott. Yep.
As a line, they had 4 scoring chances, 1 high danger.
Okay. Yeah. That kind of bears out. So if he only had one chance, one opportunity to seize everything he ever wanted, I don't think he captured it, but I do think that,
all right, podcast is over.
I do think they have I got the beanie on too, so I feel like I'm. But I do think you just give him another chance and see what happens. I don't see why you would rush him off that. Now maybe you put him back in the third line or down the lineup because you didn't think the third line was great tonight. But I think you go with another game or two with him with on that top line.
Yeah, and you see Smith go back to the third line and we talked about like, oh, Hall has a certain, you know, dynamic threat on the third line, but he hadn't been really performing that way on the third line anyway. So you move him to the top line. I don't know if it's just because I've had a bad week, but I was just excited to see it. As soon as I saw the lineup, I was like, okay, this is great. I'm going to watch this and this is going to be fun. Cause I just, in my mind was like, I have no idea how this is going to look and I just want to see it. So one thing that it did, I did want to point out about the move and how it affected, you know, that line and the third line is that throughout the season, Hall has always played on a line where two guys were centers at least at some point in their career. And I can't remember the last time I've seen Taylor Hall, maybe once this season. I don't know how many times he's taken a face off this season, but he took one in this game and he doesn't have to on the third line because Coyle and Frederick are both guys that have played center. And then when he's playing on the second line, Krejci and Zacha are two guys that can take the face-off. So he's always the third option for the face-offs and doesn't usually get in at the dot. So it's just kind of funny to see him there.
Hall has apparently actually taken 8 faceoffs this season.
I can't remember another.
Yeah, that's more than I would have guessed.
And it's just because, like we mentioned, they like Frederick used to be a center and still at times has played center for the Bruins this season and in recent years. And then Zacha, obviously, we've talked about how he could be an option at center if you lose Bergeron or Krejci, because that's how his natural position is as well. So you never see Hall in that role. Maybe that's a problem because Marchand doesn't take many faceoffs either. You're kind of just leaving it to Bergeron, but
Marchand is usually the second guy, though.
Yeah, he's the second option. I think, yeah, this must have been a situation where both of them got waived or something, and it ended up with Hall.
I mean, Marchand is usually the second guy, but it's an automatic loss. He doesn't really try much on him. He more so just kind of like gets a head start on going behind the centerman to chase after it. I want to rescind a take I had the other day. I think it was a little premature, a little unfair of me. And Scott kind of agreed with me, so maybe he'll also rescind. Kopanen, I thought that maybe the first game he was a little overwhelmed because he's definitely settled in the last few games with his trial stint with the Bruins. And Scott, I don't know if you have how many faceoffs each player won tonight in front of you. I don't know if you have a tab like that. Do you?
Yeah, okay. Kopanen won 11. Kopanen won 4, lost 7, so he's 36%. To be fair, Bergeron was 39%, so he wasn't much better.
Well, I must have really paid attention to Kopanen's 4 faceoff wins because I thought that the last few games he's been pretty good in the faceoff circle, but I guess he hasn't. But regardless, he's definitely settled in a little bit.
Yeah, he's been pretty good on faceoffs in general, tonight aside. But yeah, I thought it was another pretty strong game for him and for that line. When we were just talking about the other lines, I was looking, and that line was the only line that had multiple high danger chances tonight with all 3 members on the ice. You know, I don't know about mixing and matching and stuff. But the other 3 lines all only had 1 each, and the Foligno, Kopanen, and Greer line had 3. So, and it kind of felt like that. Like, they had some good offensive zone shifts, I thought, especially in the second period, like, and even like early in the third, like when there were some lulls in the Bruins, kind of offensive opportunities, they were able to at least generate some momentum by getting down the offensive zone and keeping some possession there. So, Kopanen has not looked overwhelmed, and obviously this is probably the biggest test yet facing a team like Tampa, and especially that D-core. Like, you want to see how he holds up against that. And I thought he more than held his own. So that's, you know, it's a tough situation for Montgomery, right? Because like they call up Mark McLaughlin and you bring him on this road trip, and presumably you want to get him in at some point and not have him just, you know, sit for an entire road trip.
Just hanging out.
But it's like, all right, well, who are you taking out? Because that fourth line continues to perform pretty well. Kopanen seems to be getting better with each game. So, you know, you're not going to sit someone when they don't deserve it. So, unfortunately for McLaughlin, I mean, now there's a back-to-back coming up Saturday, Sunday. So maybe if someone's a little nicked up, you know, that's an easy opportunity to get him in there on Sunday or something. But otherwise, you know, I think Kopanen deserves to stay in. I think Greer's doing enough to stay in. So, you know, maybe you look at Craig Smith, but
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I was thinking that I think Mick, and this is nothing against Craig Smith, but I wouldn't mind McLaughlin on the right side with Frederick and Coyle. I think that could be a good quick heavy line with some puck possession. And I do think McLaughlin's first NHL career goal was on a pass by Frederick on a 2-on-1, but I don't know if they played much 5-on-5 together, if that was more of a line change type thing. But it was probably, I don't know what
I think they were on the same line. Yeah, I think he was with them a little bit.
I could see McLaughlin complimenting Frederick and Coyle a little bit better than Smith right now. So and again, I like Craig Smith as a person, but for right now, I just think it's a long season. Like, see what you have, right? You never know.
Yeah, so. And you'd rather take a guy out of the lineup that feels relatively secure in the role. Like, I know Craig Smith has been scratched at different points of this season, but like, if you're Kopanen and you're just trying to hang on and prove yourself, like, he's at the point in his career where if he does play well, you need to reward him. Whereas, you know, it's okay to get Smith a night off if you just want to, you know, use McLaughlin because you have the ability to because you called him up to see him. So, yeah, I think Craig Smith would be the most obvious choice to switch McLaughlin in for. And I wanted to comment on Kopanen because I agree. He does seem to have settled in. And it's one of those things where you see a guy get a chance for the first time after playing in the AHL and you're wanting to see whether or not they can adapt to NHL pace, NHL size, any like, you know, guys that can make moves around you. And I thought his defending and his pressure that he put on was really good. He didn't get beat. I can't remember a time that he did, at least against Tampa Bay. And he's also taking up time penalty killing, which is big. And he's not getting beat by guys on the penalty when he's penalty killing. So he's definitely earned that spot in the meantime while Nosek is out. Until he shows a reason, like a letdown, then you leave him there.